Contents of this program are intended only to educate you about your health and health care and are not intended to diagnose or treat individual listeners' medical conditions. Before you undertake any course of treatment, please consult with a qualified health practitioner, preferably a naturopathic medical doctor. Welcome to the Radio Doctors, dispensing advice on wellness, healthy living, and navigating the mainstream, alternative, and complementary medicine universes. Here are your hosts, Dr. Valeria Wyckoff and Dr. Damian Brandeis.
Good afternoon, everyone. Dr. Damian here.
Hello, and this is Dr. Valeria Wyckoff. I'm just pleased to be with you this afternoon.
And we have an exciting show indeed. Probably one of the most famous naturopathic physicians in the country. His name is Dr. Peter Dodamo, and he lives in Connecticut and has an extensive publishing, speaking, concern. He has written several books. We're going to be interviewing him shortly from his home in Connecticut by way of telephone. Isn't communication just wonderful?
Oh, I just love our technology.
And we'll be talking to him about his two new books. He's written a new book on aging, and he's written another one on menopause.
But I think the one that most people have heard about is Eat Right for Your Type.
That's right.
Eat Right for Your Blood Type.
It's called Eat Right for Your Type.
Uh-huh.
And it's the blood type diet.
Yeah.
And you can find out information about him by going to our website, which is radiodoctors.net, and clicking on the link there under this show on February 25th to Dr. Peter Dodamo. And I think it's
www.adamo.com.
And so you can find out information about him if you would like to know more about what he does specifically. But the good news is he's going to be on momentarily after we make a few announcements here. And we've got four of his books. And so if you call in, we're going to be giving away books during the course of the show. Dr. Wyckoff, I'm going to put her on the spot and have her come up with some little tests or quizzes or something she can think about what we might want to ask, maybe the kind of tea we're serving or what the four blood types are or whatever, but I'm sure she'll come up with a nice little quiz.
Oh, yes, I'm good at that, right?
Yeah. And so.
And we got to tell them about the books that we're giving away.
Well, there were two. We've got two copies of two books.
Mm-hmm.
The first one is Aging, Fight It With Your Blood Type. How is it?
Fight It With a Blood Type Diet. Right.
And it says, the individualized plan for preventing and treating brain decline, cognitive impairment, hormonal deficiency, and the loss of vitality associated with advancing years. And then do you have the menopause one there?
Right. Menopause. Manage its symptoms with blood type diet. The individualized plan for preventing and treating hot flashes, loss of libido, mood changes, osteoporosis, and related conditions. So for folks that are interested in how to age gracefully or how to go through menopause mm-hmm. gracefully or know somebody that you would like to give mm-hmm. one of these books to as a gift, mm-hmm. this would be a great opportunity. I'm sure everybody either is interested in these subjects or knows somebody that is.
Well, and you know, you could win the gift and then you could pass it on to somebody else. Books are wonderful in that way that once you read them, unless you want to retain them for a reference, it's really nice to share them if they're in good condition. And folks, each of these books is about a $25, $26 value book. So it's really a great opportunity for you to win something and learn something. So stay with us over the next 2 hours because we're going to be interviewing him momentarily. Now, just to kind of do a little bit of business, in the upcoming weeks, Dr. Wyckoff and I planned some of the shows for the next few weeks. We normally them about 13 weeks at a time, but we were running low on shows. So we have a whole new set of shows.
We were getting near the end of our 13
That's
weeks.
Right. And so next week we're going to have an individual come on and talk about thermography, which is
right.
an alternative form of imaging as opposed to x-rays or CAT scans or magnetic resonance or positron emissions or whatever. This is kind of a different form, alternative form for imaging.
Right, and a lot of women are really excited about it because it's a way of doing cancer screens of the breast without the whole pain and aggravation of a mammography, we're going to go down and actually look at the whole facility and see how it works so we can talk about it more next week. But it seems like a choice that's very effective and without all the disadvantages that mammography has for women and a good price.
Right. And then on March 10th, I'm going to ask for a person who has a business called Durastil, and he's going to be talking about alternatives in water filtration systems. So we're going to be discussing, it's going to be all water all the time, and reverse osmosis and spring water, and maybe some systems that you can even put distilled water systems that you can put into your house. So, and you know, really the benefits to be had from maybe having purified waters in some form. I'm seeing an awful lot of people that are coming in with heavy metals, and we're tracing some of it back. We've taken water samples and actually looked at it, and even purified water and some water that's around has got a little bit of contamination. So we're going to have a discussion about that.
And I've just seen some people recently who were using their reverse osmosis system, but then were very mineral depleted.
Mm-hmm.
And that was creating its own problems because then they weren't really holding on to the water that they were drinking.
Then in anticipation of our health fair, I don't know why I'm having so much trouble talking today.
It must be that kind of day.
What is it? Is it paint or what?
I don't know.
Great. They're painting the studios, folks, and we're a little woozy here. You know? So, anyway, maybe that's it.
That'll be convenient.
In anticipation of our health fair at Granola's, which you can find out more on our website, radiodoctors.net, on the 25th, we're going to actually have the lab lord come in on the 18th and talk about functional testing and what that's all about. And so that pretty much takes us through the month of March, and then you're just going to have to keep tuning in.
And March 25th is our health fair at Granola's. We're going to be there for all day. Plus, then we're going to actually have our live remote from there. And so you're going to be able to come down and see what's going on and hopefully get some of this testing done, because it's an exciting way to determine whether you're actually getting the benefit. You know, there's a difference between taking supplements and actually having them being beneficially in your system. And if they're not getting into your system, then why not? Or are you getting enough? Or are you getting too much? Or, you know, what's really happening on that level? And these saliva tests actually are very effective way, and urine tests are very effective way of assessing that without having to draw your blood.
All right. So I understand that our host is holding on the line. We're going to go to a quick station
identification,
and we're going to welcome. Yeah, I'm always mixing up hosts and guests. And we're going to. I'm telling you, I'm woozy from the paint. anyway, I won't harp on that too much. If our producer will take us to a station identification, you're listening to Radio Doctors. Be sure to give us a call today at 480-949-1310. We're taking your calls. We've got four books to give away. We've got a wonderful guest. We're going to be talking about the impact of your blood type on your health. We will return right after this identification.
At Granola's, we really do care what you put in your body. That's why we have created a unique shopping experience where you can feel comfortable in knowing that everything we sell is as fresh and natural as it can be. We search for products from around the world to give you the best selection in natural products that actually make a difference in how you feel. We also take pride in our selection of our people. Our nutrition experts are the kind of people you feel comfortable entrusting your health to. They always go out of their way to make sure you get the right product for your needs. So whether you're a health nut or just trying to eat a little better, we can help you take your health to the next level. We are truly a neighborhood natural market located at the southwest corner of Ray and Rural in Chandler or on Shea in Scottsdale.
Hello, I'm Dr. Valeria Wyckoff, naturopathic physician, registered dietitian, and radio doctor. I specialize in listening closely, so my treatment plan is customized just for your optimal health. My office is conveniently located in Chandler on Warner Road near the 101. Call and make an appointment, 480-857-2768. That is 480-857-2768. Or go to radiodoctors.net to connect and learn more information about me. I will look forward to hearing from you.
You're listening to The Radio Doctors with your hosts, Dr. Valeria Wyckoff and Dr. Damian Brandeis. Please call the station at 480-949-1310.
Welcome back, everyone. Dr. Damian here.
Hello, and this is Dr. Valeria. We're pleased to be with you this afternoon, and we're delighted to have our guest, Dr. Diadamo, on the line.
Dr. Diadamo, are you there? Can
Hi,
you hear
how are
us?
You doing?
Hello. Welcome to our show.
Oh, thank you.
It's so nice to have you back. It's been almost a year. I believe you were on our show last year on another station. I've been admonished that I'm not supposed to mention other stations, so it's nice to have you return. We're
My
on
pleasure.
A different station now, KXAM 1310, and those of you that are in the audience, if you would like to actually see me, I guess you can tune in and look at us in the studio at 1310 KXAM.
KXAM.com.
That's right. All right. Now, Dr. Dodamo, in a way of introducing yourself, why don't you, for the sake of the audience that may not be familiar with some of your work, tell us a little bit about your education and then move into Eat Right for Your Type. And we've got two new books, and I have looked through them and read most of them. And I've got to say at the outset that I think you have created one of the most lovely little books that's straightforward, easy to read, easy to understand, packed with information. I was delighted. It was an easy read.
Well, thank you.
I did. Didn't you, Dr. Wyckoff?
Yes, yes. It was very nice, very clear, very to the point, and I loved the little plan. But yeah, let's, you know, our listeners, yeah, not all of them are really familiar with Eat Right for Your Type, and so we'd like to kind of give them the basics before we move too much into these books.
Okay. Well, you know, as the beginning introduction sort of encapsulated, I spend a lot of my time looking at the role that your blood type plays in your health.
Right.
And we're all naturopaths here, so there's mm-hmm. a sort of an agreement, I think, that we all could seize upon, which is that we tend to want to understand specific types of ways of looking at our patients. In the standard conventional medicine world, this isn't really done that much.
Mm-hmm.
But true. I know that Valeria is a homeopathic person, so it's done in there. And I know acupuncture is another big modality. So a lot of traditional medicine has always in the past looked at wanting to try and come up with some way to be able to make some sort of statement about that person who's right in front of you, that person that's in your office. That's going to be pertinent. It's going to cut through all the various systems and theories and approaches to arrive at something that's really just for that particular person.
Tailor-made.
Not that all the other approaches
individual.
Have value. They, mm-hmm. they all have value.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But what's the right one?
Mm-hmm.
And
that's right.
I think this is, you know, it's interesting. This theory goes back a long time. It started with my dad, another naturopath. And just permit me a self-serving moment here for the benefit
Absolutely.
Of being a naturopath.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think that an idea like looking at your blood type would have come through any other thinking paradigm other than being a naturopath, because it's scientific, it's reproducible, but it looks at the existing scientific literature in a way that is different than how the standard conventional medicine people look at it.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly. So, we were just actually talking about research that doesn't differentiate between blood types and how valid is that results then.
Echinacea, maybe we can get to that later on, but echinacea certainly is something that comes
that
to
whole
mind.
Women's Health Initiative series of mm-hmm. It's a very, very classic, you know, thing that says, well, we're going to try and practice what we call herd immunity,
mm-hmm.
Or herd epidemiology,
mm-hmm.
rather, just this notion that that somehow or another the study's going to be more significant if we throw more people in it.
Right.
But actually, a lot of times the studies become less significant because you're essentially negating any of the advantages of what would be genetically unique about that person that you could have taken advantage of. Now, lots of naturopaths have ways of doing this. We have an entire field now called nutrigenomics, which is
mm-hmm.
looking at the genomic effects in terms of individualized
mm-hmm.
relationships
mm-hmm.
between diet and disease. My particular focus is blood type. It's always, I'm a naturopath. I like low technology types of things. Everybody can find out their blood type for a reasonable amount of money if they don't know it already. Matter of fact, you can be somewhat helpful to society at large by finding out your blood type, and if you're really healthy, you can go give some blood and everything.
That's right.
You know, you become sociologically, you know, you're good for society and you
mm-hmm.
find out your blood type too.
Mm-hmm.
So basically, one of the things I like about it is that it's low technology, but it's consistent, meaning that if we discover that person is basically blood type A, we know that that is going to carry over from doctor's office to county hospital.
Mm-hmm.
If we go and read about in the literature or scientific studies that arrived at conclusions about blood type A, or if we make those conclusions scientifically ourselves, they're going to apply across the board. That's really one of the advantages of of using blood type. It's actually a very conventional biological marker that to naturopaths actually has slightly more significance.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not that the other people shouldn't be aware of this information. They should, because it comes out of their own discovery process. If you look at, you know, I think there's probably from about 1966 about 17,000 articles on Medline on blood type.
Wow.
About 3,000 to 4,000 of those articles have nothing to do with transfusion.
Now
they
that's
have to do
interesting
with physiology.
Because I was expecting it to be more transfusion medicine.
Well, you know, that's what all medic. Matter of fact, I must admit that I'll take a little bit of the blame for that myself. When my father was looking at this idea 30 years ago, I thought it was a little crazy, because when I was and this goes into the tell us about yourself part of the interview here.
Mm-hmm.
I graduated Bastyr College many moons ago. I think I'm in my 25th year of practice, so this has got to be like 82 or 81 that I graduated.
Mm-hmm.
And Bastyr is, you know, then as now, always prided itself on being science-based. And there was nothing that I was taught in Bastyr that was anything significant about blood types. I was taught, of course, in immunology class, the relationship between the blood types with regard to transfusions.
Mm-hmm.
But I even remember at the time thinking to myself, you know, I don't believe that this transfusion is really the reason we have blood types. I think that ultimately there's probably something that's kind of skipped a step here. In other words, we found that this transfusion relationship, in other words, if you take the wrong type of blood and put it into somebody, they die, was such a profound discovery. It allowed such a major advance in medicine, the ability to transfuse blood, which really was the ability to do surgery. It was the ability to take people off the battlefield and preserve their lives, that we just kind of catapulted over really what the significance of blood type was. It was just so much, it had such an absolute immediate day-to-day effect right then and there.
Mm-hmm.
And yet, why do we have blood types? I mean, we certainly don't have blood types basically to prevent transfusion reactions.
Mm-hmm.
They're there for some deeper, more elemental reason. And I remember going to school and going, you know, I wish I knew that elemental reason was, because there's this guy I call Dad sometimes who basically was saying that there was this relationship he was seeing between how he could blood type people and find that when certain blood types were when a person types, let's say, for instance, is blood type O, if you put them on what at the time was like the quote-unquote healthy diet, just like, you know, rabbit food kind of orange thing, that they didn't always do so good.
That's right.
And, you know, this was profound, because here I was coming out of Bastyr College with all this late-breaking or, you know, naturopathic science, make everybody a vegetarian, low-fat, complex carbohydrate, allergy testing, pulse testing, elimination diet, you name it, cytotoxic testing. And here was this, you know, guy who really, you know, he was one of those naturopaths that was in that kind of dead period. I guess it's the point where our profession was kind of dead, which was like the 1950s and 60s. And yet he had, you know, for these 2 decades been blood typing people and coming away going, you know, there's a certain thing. I know that some people don't do good on this, and I think I discovered one of the links between that. So
that's,
he was a guy
really
who said,
profound.
Yeah, he had like a little signpost. You think about the significance of simply being able to say, you go that way and you go that way.
That's right. And I'll have to say, you know, even in my training, that was when the blood type diet was really becoming really well known in medical school. And it was such a relief to think that that vegetarianism wasn't the only way to go. As you can tell, I'm O blood type. And so it was like, you know, that just didn't work for me. And to be able to honor the wisdom of my body and discover that, you know, to be morally superior, I didn't have to be vegetarian.
Well, but, you know, I also want to say that when you consider that many of the chronic diseases in this day and age have an immune association with them, in other words, you know, there's some kind of an immune response. For instance, you can look at cancer as a failure of reproduction, but you can, from a genetic sense, but you can also look at it as a greater failure of the immune system in the body to be able to detect something that's got cell markers that are foreign to us, and yet we've created it. And once we accept it and immortalize it, then it becomes a part of us to our detriment. And so when we're looking at anything that has an immune component to it, and certainly you would get that out of the 4 major blood groups, then it only stands to reason that whatever might be foreign to us, it would be inherently going to stimulate inflammation or whatever else in the body. I mean, I think that's just kind of real basic to me.
You know, the funny part is, I'll tell you a little story that I'm just getting some slides ready for a lecture that I'm giving in New York City. And for the first time, I'm actually going to talk about a guy who's been part of my website for about the better part of the last decade. And he's an interesting individual. He's Typo.
Mm-hmm.
Long-time vegetarian. He was head of the Houston, Texas Vegetarian Society. He was the three-time winner of the National Vegetarian Trivia Contest. I mean, the guy was like a super vegetarian. And at a certain point in his time, he gets a disorder called pemphigus, which is an autoimmune disorder of the skin.
Mm-hmm.
What happens is the immune system actually starts targeting things in the skin, proteins in the skin, as foreign. So what happens is, essentially, for the listeners, so they understand, your immune system starts to think your skin is foreign, so you start
right.
attacking your skin.
Mm-hmm.
So these people get all sorts of real nasty-looking kind of blisters, and their mouths just starts to get all look like
mm-hmm.
chopped meat and stuff. And it's pretty fatal. And in essence, the only way they keep you alive is huge amounts of steroids. But then, essentially, usually they people live a while, and then they die of infections. So this guy, basically, there he was, Joe, you know, three-time vegetarian trivia contest winner, Typo, sitting there with an autoimmune disease.
Uh-huh.
And he came across my book, and he said, you know, I've tried everything. And he had a list on his website of all the things he tried. I mean, he's a very diligent individual. Within a year, he had gotten all his blisters down, and within 2 years, he was not on any steroids. And now he's about 7 or 8 years into the thing, and essentially he's completely asymptomatic. As a matter of fact, one of the problems he had was that his gluteal muscles, which are the muscles that are part of your bum, you know,
mm-hmm.
That you sit down on, had so withered away from all the prednisone
mm-hmm.
that he couldn't sit down because he didn't have a butt anyway. And that came back too.
Wow.
So, in essence, one of the things, and to talk about, you know, essentially this link between immunity and blood type and diet, is that part of the problem is we have, as a society, given into the marketing aspects of what a diet means. In other words, the get-rich-quick people have taken over the concept of diet, and over from the get-rich-quick people has been appropriated by the institutions, and what's left over from the institutions has been appropriated by agribusiness.
That's right. You're absolutely right.
And so let's go back to the first one, get-rich-quick. And when people think of a diet, they think, oh, I have a wedding in 2 weeks. I need to get into a tuxedo.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a bad way to think about your diet. Now, it's actually a very unresourceful way to think about your diet, because all you're thinking of is basically calories and weight, when actually your diet could have such a much more dynamic relationship to you.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things you look at, so look at all the diet things. They're always weight loss diets. Sometimes they talk about cholesterol or some other thing like that, but most of the time it's never about using diet in a very preemptive, healing manner, other than these very limited, you know, horizon line kind of things. They'll lose weight or such and such. Here's an autoimmune disease which typically, you know, kills somebody. And through just simply isolating by virtue of a genetic marker, which is your blood type, getting a person on a diet that would maybe take out some of the foods that were offensive and maybe
mm-hmm.
emphasize a few foods that were perhaps more healing,
mm-hmm.
you could temper that immune response.
Mm-hmm.
It's a totally different way of looking at diet. It's not an uncomfortable way for us as naturopaths to look at diet. Because we go back to that Hippocratic thing where it's like, you know, let your food be your medicine kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone else has kind of forgot that.
Mm-hmm.
But basically, food can be a dynamic healing agent that actually can be applicable in disorders that often don't have what we might assume to be a dietary component. If you go to the pemphigus website, they say, well, some people have tried alternative medicine, and some people say that the blood type diet is effective. But, other, you know, our official position is diet has no effect in this.
Right.
I mean, ultimately, I suppose, you know, one could be a little bit skeptical, and that would be fine. But other things are the same. For instance, if you look at people with, let's say, autoimmune disorders of the thyroid, they respond very well to dieting for their blood type as well. Rheumatoid arthritis. We talked about cancer, for instance. The blood type diet for your specific blood type is wonderful for people undergoing chemotherapy. It has a profound protective effect on the white blood cells and bone marrow.
Right.
I'll tell you a cute little story. One of my other long-term patients was a type A, stage 3 breast cancer, and great patient. Did so well, she was a psychologist, that she organized the Sloan Kettering support groups for the breast cancer patients, and there
mm-hmm.
they would meet once a week in Sloan Kettering.
Mm-hmm.
And she would try and get people to look at this blood type book, and sometimes people wouldn't. And most of the time they would say, ah, it's just too crazy.
Mm-hmm.
And so in essence, she said, she came into the office for a checkup one time. She said, I had the most interesting experience. She said, I was holding my weekly support session, and there goes by across the front door the fellow, he's an Oriental fellow, who's head of their radiation oncology department. And he looks in like he just kind of does a cursory look in the room. Oh, it's a support group. Then he comes back and does a double take and goes over to my patient and says, oh, that's a very good book, he goes. That's an excellent book. And he's pointing to the blood type diet book, Eat Right for Your Type. He goes, very good book. And my patient was so absolutely stunned that this guy would say that. She started talking to him, and he encapsulated it in Sloan Kettering type phraseology. He simply said to her, he goes, last person in support group always waving that book. In essence, basically, that the truth of the matter is that most of the people who do follow the diet for their blood type cancer patients, they do maximize their effects of chemotherapy. They keep their bone marrow. They have less problems with mouth ulcers.
Mm-hmm.
Low. Because why? Because you're eating in accordance with your immune system.
And the immune system isn't being overburdened by unnecessary attack from things that you could just naturally eliminate. That you would have an immune response to. If you've got so much in an arsenal and then you have multiple fronts to fight on, the less fronts you can fight on, then the more you have to let your own body's natural system really concentrate and focus on what it needs to worry about.
No yeah. better example, U.S. military, greatest military force in the history
that,
of mankind.
Right. Mm-hmm.
They got stretched a little bit
exactly.
thin now. Now they got problems.
That's mm-hmm. right. I was going to go there, and then, you know, we're not on a politically oriented station anymore. And I thought, well,
it's
I'm not going to say
simile.
That anymore.
It's
you know, we've had a person waiting very patiently by the name of Wayne Dr. Dodamo. Could we go to our caller here?
Sure.
Great. We got a few others, too, but let's start hitting them. Hello, Elaine. Are you there?
It's Lorraine.
Oh, well, it says E-L-A-I-N-E
okay.
on here. I'm so sorry.
That's all right. A lot of people do that.
All right.
Okay.
What can we do? What's your question?
I had a couple of questions. I take it from this conversation, if you're a type O, you're supposed to be eating meat. Is that right?
I guess so. I can barely hear you, dear.
Oh, well, I'll yell. Is
okay.
that
good.
Better?
I can hear you now.
Okay.
You're asking about blood type O doing better on animal protein?
Yes, that's what her question.
That's her question.
Yeah, that's true.
Okay, so then my question would be, is I know I had a friend who gave up beef, and then she said she had to have beef. So if you're a type O, is it that you have to have beef, or you just have to have the animal protein?
Well, beef or animal protein, in general, high-quality protein.
Okay.
In essence, I'll give you a perfect example why. Inside of our intestines is an enzyme that helps us break down fat. And this enzyme splits cholesterol, and it makes something called a chylomicron, which is the way you bring little fatty molecules into your bloodstream. This enzyme also helps you assimilate calcium. Now, this is an enzyme that, if you're blood type O, you have lots of. And it's been known since the 1950s that people who are blood type O have a lot of this enzyme in their intestinal tract. Guess what? The way you turn this enzyme on is to eat protein.
Okay.
So if you're blood type O, you turn on the enzyme that allows you to split dietary fat by eating protein.
Mm-hmm.
You actually increase your absorption of calcium if you're blood type O by eating protein, which is completely counterintuitive to what they would teach you, for instance, in a standard nutrition course, because they would tell you in standard nutrition course eating protein would result in you perhaps maybe losing calcium. But in blood type O, it does the exact opposite because they're gifted with this highly specialized enzyme that helps them do this. It's a result of adaptation, you know, evolution. You call it what you want. But basically, they have this special gift that allows them to break down fat and assimilate calcium, but the gift is only turned on if they eat certain types of protein.
Because okay. I don't eat beef or veal or pork, but I eat fish and chicken.
That would probably suffice. You'd probably want to make sure that you – one of the things you want to do is make sure that you get an adequate amount of something called carnitine in your diet.
Yeah, I take that.
And carnitine helps the little batteries inside of your cells fire better.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so if you pop off like your watch and you take out that battery and you put the watch back together, watch works better.
Yeah.
Well, when you take carnitine, it's like putting in a new battery in the back of your watch. So in essence, one of the things you don't get too much of in most of the white meats is a lot of carnitine. one of the advantages is that of meats, on the other hand, is that, you know, nowadays when people think of red meat, they used to think of that unhealthy thing that their parents fed them, you know, that kind of greasy, marbleized meat.
Right.
But now you have these grass-fed combines out in the Midwest, and they're gradually getting into the places like Whole Foods and Wild Oats. These are producing, you know, grass-fed meats that have a lower fat content than a piece of skinned chicken.
Mm-hmm.
So, in essence, really, my advice is you got to take out the pencil eraser and erase your prior conceptions of what red meat means as an entity, because the red meat that your ancestors ate was this naturally gamey, low-fat meat,
mm-hmm.
and that's actually a wonderful food, very high concentration, and if you can get grass-fed, it's profoundly good for you.
Well, and the other thing is then it generally, especially if you get it natural, then you're not getting the hormones and the antibiotics and a lot of the other substances that can end up getting stored in the fat of the meat that can create a lot of problems. And
well, you know, Damien can tell you that high-quality grass-fed meat is going to be high in something called CLA, which you don't get often in the rest of your diet, and this is called conjugated linolenic acid. It's
right.
Probably the single most potent Now, here's another counterintuitive thought. The single most potent anti-cancer compound ever found in the diet is only found in grass-fed meat.
Excellent
now basically
point. That's an excellent point. I can tell you that the cancer rates are low in the area of Ohio, where I'm from, where many of the people that are in the agriculture business and actually have small farms and raise their own meat and then they consume it. You know, they've had a very close relationship with the animals. They've raised them sometimes to the point that they're pets and becomes painful for small children. I remember going through that, seeing
sure.
a few things.
Sure.
But the point being that the farmers...
And you find very few people on farms who are vegans.
Precisely.
Yeah, very few people raised on farms are like that's kind of an intellectual city slicker kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. And what I wanted to say is that the area that I was in, though I wasn't Quaker, was a Quaker community, and those people were very close to their agriculture. They had good quality meat. They of course made their living by selling it, but they also produced enough for their own consumption. And the interesting thing And we talk about this. We don't know whether it's in the water supply or what it is. But, you know, my dad is 93. My mom is 89. Everybody around there is, like, living forever. They have Methuselah genes. And I'm sure they're all different blood types. But the point being that three-quarters of them are probably type O. And they live very, very well. And I think it's because their water's clean, their air is clean, and they're getting this quality of food. It's essential. They don't have the cancers and a lot of the other autoimmune stuff. You don't hear people talking about fibromyalgia around there.
A lot of it is just simply the fact that, you know, if you don't teach people to eat better, it doesn't make any sense to have them eat therapeutically if they're going to eat therapeutically out of things that are not healthy.
Right.
Right.
So, you know, in essence, that's why Eat Right for Your Type, if you go back, it says, you know, I was talking about grass-fed beef in 1996. I was talking about things like spelt, you know, mm-hmm. thinking about sprouted breads, you know. There are better ways of eating that are not expensive, that are just closer to the way your ancestors ate. And, you know, people have written entire books on it, and I'm sure that there are – it's not my area of expertise in terms of that, but there's just a basic common sense that comes from saying to yourself, hey, I can find better quality. It's maybe a little bit more expensive, but I can eat this, and I know that it's doing the right thing inside of me. But the other side of the coin is look at where you're putting your money. If you're putting your money into some independent rancher who's trying to make the extra effort to make something clean, that's a nicer place to put the money than to Monsanto, you know, or somebody like that.
Oh, what an
excellent
point.
Monsanto doesn't need any more money.
What an excellent point. And all of you that are listening, regardless of what kind of medicine you utilize, it is hugely important for you to vote with your dollars. Go to the Whole Foods, the Sprouts, the
Henry's,
the other places in the valley,
Sunflower.
Coronado Cafe,
Granolas,
that actually, you know, in a restaurant. It's just hugely important that you spend that extra money, because money going into that keeps it available and makes that, and it is sustainable agriculture.
Right.
They just don't get it.
So, Lorraine, are you still there?
Yes, I'm listening. I had one other question.
Okay.
Okay.
All right. With this Eat Right for Your Blood Type, Does that affect what supplements you should take?
So yes.
They come from food?
Yes, it does.
So would that be in the book?
Yes.
Okay.
Let me. Is it? I barely hear the young lady, so I'm just going to.
She's talking about supplements that how supplements vary based on blood type, and if they don't vary as well. And my comment was yes, and that it was in the book. Would you like to elaborate on that?
A little bit here, but, you know, it's interesting that the supplements are something that takes a different, an entirely different role if you start to speak of an individual versus just a generalization. For instance, one of the things, my pet peeve amongst naturopaths is when they look at something, they'll read a study that says, oh, ginkgo is good for such and such, or selenium is good for thyroid function. And the studies may be a little bit okay, far from conclusive, but now because it's something inside of what we do, it's a supplement or an herb, we rush to use it. And then later on we're scratching our heads wondering why it didn't behave the way we thought it was. It was because when we employed it, we didn't change our thinking. We were giving that selenium or that herb in the same mindset as a medical doctor gives a drug.
Right.
In other words, cause and effect. Actually, much better is to understand the things that make a person unique, because if you understand some basic things that make them different, you will understand how they go through an illness process, and you'll discover that there are ways in that process that allow you to manipulate the process in a more subtle way. And the herbs and the vitamins become far more potent because they're not really being given as an alternative to drugs. They're being employed in a sort of a dynamic sense, a guidance sense. Because, I'll give you a perfect example. Let's take a type O. Type O tends to get problems with one of their problems is that they tend to have more inflammation to the common yeast organism called
mm-hmm.
Candida. So if you look at Joe Schmo on the street, if he's type O and he has Candida, he will have more inflammation to the Candida than Jane Doe, who's type A. Now, there's a beautiful type of seaweed called bladderwrack that has a sugar in it called fucose, and that particular sugar works specifically in the mechanism by which yeast cause inflammation in that blood type.
Mm-hmm.
So now you can say to yourself, well, all naturopaths know about the seaweed, but the little bit of extra knowledge about the specific scenario in that person gives it a whole new relevance. In other words, we become that much more the purveyor of smart medicine rather than simply thinking that, well, the patient came to see me, so he doesn't want drugs, so now I have to cook up something that's the equivalent of his blood pressure medicine because, he needs to take something. And there's a place for all that. But one of the things I find so delightful about doing this blood type thing is that I look at supplements in a totally different way. I'm always trying to see where in that particular process there is something that I know is going to be influenced in that person.
That's
right. And
this
is really, I think, a futuristic thing. I don't even think the naturopaths are really caught up to this one.
And Dr. Didamo, isn't it also a true statement that because of the sorting, let's just say the sorting of people into essentially four or five major groups here, what we're really talking about is that the propensity for someone to develop certain diseases or health issues is sorting with the blood type. So obviously the things that are also going to help those things sort as well. Do you understand what I'm saying?
Sure.
And so to the listener, it would only stand to reason that if certain individuals have weaknesses in certain systems in the body, you know, thyroid versus a propensity for diarrhea, diabetes or versus a propensity for maybe cancer or other osteo problems, that it's going to make a difference then based on what the nutrition is. And that part of that nutrition, of course, is our herbs and our vitamins and everything all taken in working all together in a synergistic way. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Okay.
It's what we were, Hippocrates basically said, let your food be your medicine. The Lucretius said, one man's food is someone else's poison. You know, there's a lot of wisdom in that phrase because, in essence, we have seen many people who will react to something that we think is really benign, but in that particular person, it doesn't work. Maybe that they have some kind of an antibody to it, or they're allergic to it, or they're intolerant of it. I just think that one of the things we have to stop doing in the world of conventional 21st century biomedicine is trying to fit everyone through the same keyhole. And really what we're not doing is coming to grips and embracing. Now, maybe since now we have this component called this nutrigenomic model, maybe now there'll be a politically correct way for medicine to embrace the individual. But naturopathy, by definition, goes, I mean, we go out of our way, supposedly, to want to look at people as individuals. And it's not so easy to do because you have to start off really saying, what do I know about this person?
I didn't get the product from our guest.
I think that the part of the example of that is just like in a family where the mother tells they're cold, and so they tell their kids to put on a sweater, that when we're treating people without actually really understanding what's going on with them, we're forcing them to do things that don't have any relevance or can do them harm, or sometimes certainly not do them any good. And I see that frequently, that people sometimes actually even have an innate sense of what's going to be good for them personally, but it gets overridden by the medical establishment or their family or somebody else that has a different health issue.
Blood type is really one of the more significant biological markers, but there are more.
Right.
There are all sorts of stuff out there.
Yeah. Good. Did that answer your question, Lorraine?
Yes.
Okay,
Lorraine. Well, thanks for calling.
Our lines are filling up here. We need to kind of move on to some other people. Dr. Diadamo, do you need a break or can we move on here?
Oh, I'm just getting warmed up.
Oh, okay. Good. Okay. So we're going to go to our next caller. Hello, Terrence. Are you there?
Hi, yes.
How are you doing?
I'm doing okay. I seem generally healthy, but I've gotten skin lesions, and I believe it's due to liver problems, and I have AB positive blood.
Okay.
And
skin lesions.
Not really too disturbed about it, but I would like to get it cleared up, and I'm sure, I'd have to go through some type of detox.
Now, Terrence, can I ask you one question? Are you familiar with Dr. Diadamo's work with Eat Right for Your blood type diet?
Vaguely.
I've
never read the book.
All right. Well, that's the first step. But then going on from that, Dr. Diadamo, would you like to comment on his issue?
He's an AB.
Mm-hmm.
So he's got, out of the ABO blood types, he's got the least common blood type.
I can't hear you.
Yeah, I can't hear you either. So can
our producer do something about getting these people so that they can hear a little better, maybe? Can we all hear a little better?
Yeah, I hear you speak about type O blood mainly. I guess that's the most popular, but
right.
I have AB positive.
Well, I can tell you
blood.
A few things. For instance, I don't know, can you hear me okay?
Vaguely.
Okay, well, listen close. Type AB is only about 2% of the population. It has both the A and the B blood type. It's the only blood type that actually has two blood types. So in essence, the things that you want to stay away from are things that would be bad for either a person who was blood type A or a person who was blood type B. So I'll give you an executive summary here, and then you should go out and get the book at the library or go to your local bookstore. Things you don't want to eat a lot of if you're blood type AB. You want to stay away from corn. You want to stay away from chicken. You want to stay away from buckwheat. You want to stay away from some of the common grains. For instance, in general, if you're blood type AB, you don't want to eat a whole lot of red meat. You're better skewed a little bit more towards the lacto-ovo vegetarian. So in other words, a good cleansing diet, and if indeed something inside of your system is causing these lesions, there are sometimes foods that react with your blood type that actually get this response from your immune system. So if I was to give you the sort of executive summary, it would be no red meat, no chicken. Now, that leaves you turkey and all sorts of fish and stuff. Dairy products, in general, if they're cultured, are okay. You don't want to eat any tomatoes. You don't want to eat any corn. You don't want to eat any buckwheat. There's a few other grains, but that's kind of about a good start. You're going to get about 60 to 70% of the benefit by simply looking at those highly suspect foods. The other thing you want to do is find yourself a supplement of something called black currant seed oil, which any naturopath or health food store has, and take a mess of that stuff.
Black cleansing oil?
Black currant seed oil.
Oh, black currant oil.
Yeah.
Well, Terrence, because you seem to have some questions here, and it would do well for you to get the first book, which is a wonderful read, we're going to award you with one of our books here. And So I'm going to assume that you'd like to have the one on aging rather than menopause.
Yeah.
Would that
work?
Yeah,
there's good information in there. He sounds like he...
I don't look my age.
Oh, well, I have no idea. I mean, are you still alive, Terrence? Because, you know, frankly, each and every one of us is aging. You know, it's just something that happens.
Yes.
We're just all getting
older. I'm a big
guy,
and I always thought I needed that meat protein. And
okay.
Yeah, there is. I'll give you another tip, though. And this is good for the listeners, especially if you're blood type B as well. So we talk a lot about protein. If you're blood type B or you're blood type AB, you have a unique gene that in part gave you the B blood type. It's linked to another gene that has to do with your ability to regulate the amount of urea nitrogen in your blood. Now, to make a long story short, I will avoid all the complicating technical details, but you would do very good if you made an extra effort to get something called non-protein nitrogen in your diet. Now, it's not so easy to get non-protein nitrogen in your diet, because typically the only animals that eat non-protein nitrogen are cows. They chew grass and out comes steak. But in terms of essentially what you can do is you can go to your health food store and buy something called creatine, which is what those muscle guys take when they want to get muscle. And you can take a couple of scoops of this stuff. We'll give you something called non-protein nitrogen. It will have a very beneficial effect on your skin. And again, believe it or not, this doesn't have anything to do per se with the fact that you're blood type AB. It has something to do with the fact that you have a blood type B gene. So in essence, you can think even more elongated because, you know, when you start thinking about blood type, you can go right back to home plate and start looking at the gene and seeing, well, where does that darn thing go? I'll actually give you guys a tip later on to kind of blow your mind. It has nothing to do with blood type, though.
Oh, great. You know, one other thing that brings to mind to me is when somebody has, like, one parent that's one blood type and the other parent's another blood type, then they end up with, of course, a dominant blood type. But do they have some underlying effects from their other parent's blood type?
There's some theories that there is some incomplete, what's called incomplete penetrance.
Uh-huh.
Right.
And in essence, you know, blood type is a lot like eye color.
Mm-hmm.
And now, my wife has got the bluest eyes you'd ever want to see.
Uh-huh.
I got brown Italian guy eyes. So now, theoretically, my offspring should be brown.
Right.
Okay? But my daughter Emily's got hazel eyes.
Uh-huh.
So there is some aspects of blood type that might be the case. And it's a great question. And the difficulty with answering it is I have to introduce so many new concepts to this discussion.
Yeah.
But if you know what's called your secretor type,
mm-hmm.
it could give you some insight as to whether or not there's any penetrance from the recessive.
Well, and so thank you for bringing that up, because I said to Dr. Wyckoff during lunch before we came on the show, how do I know whether or not I'm a secretor type or a non-secretor type? Because I didn't see where that was indicated by any testing or whatever. And when I think about my own knowledge from when I was a former lab rat and between conventional medical school and naturopathic medical school, working in a lab and doing blood banking and actually doing some of this reaction through toxicology, it's just like, what are the secretor types versus the non-secretor types? And how do I know that?
Well, yeah, you know, I'll give you the succinct answer, because you are a techie. You can Lewis type.
Well, I understand too.
Yeah, you might. Well, you guys are familiar with the Lewis blood type?
Yes.
Well, it turns out that the Lewis blood type can be used to impute secretor status.
Oh.
So in essence, and again, this is it's wonderful science. It's probably way beyond the listeners' ken at this point. But basically, if a person is Lewis B positive,
uh-huh.
they are a secretor,
uh-huh.
because they have the secretor gene, which enabled them to convert their Lewis A into Lewis B. If a person is Lewis A positive, they are a non-secretor, because they lack the secretor gene and they could not transform Lewis A into Lewis B.
Okay.
The other thing you can do is, I think for about, I don't know, if you go to dedamo.com, for about $29, you can spit in a cup and it goes to North Carolina and they go looking for your blood type and your saliva, and then they can figure out if you're a secretor. Now, having just gone through the secretor thing, let me just tell the listeners what this all means. We talk about blood type A, B, O, AB. Well, that's like chocolate, pistachio, vanilla, and strawberry. It turns out that you can have strawberry in a sugar cone or you can have strawberry in a wafer cone. In other words, you can be a blood type O secretor or you can be a blood type O non-secretor. Mm-hmm. You could be a blood type A secretor, you could be a blood type A non-secretor.
Mm-hmm.
What it means is that if you are a secretor, let's say you're an A secretor like yours truly, I have a gene that puts my blood type in free form in my secretions. So, for instance, Peter D'Adamo could be blood type from his saliva. He could be blood type from his tears. He could be blood type from his sweat. He secretes his blood type in his secretions. Now, if you're a non-secretor like Mrs. D'Adamo, you're missing the gene that allows you to put your blood type in your secretions, so you only have your blood type in your digestive tract and on your blood cells. Now, what's the significance of having your blood type all over the place versus only having it on your red blood cells? It's better for your immune system to have your blood type all over the place because when you're a secretor, think about it, saliva, perspiration, semen, vaginal fluids, these are all portals into the body. These are places where there's routinely microbial stuff going on. So when you're a secretor and you put your blood type secretions in these portals, you're conditioning the portal to you. When you're a non-secretor, you don't do it. Turns out maybe the non-secretor gene is older. So these people don't actually have, like, in other words, I tell my students, it's like a medieval town. If you're a secretor, you have one of those beautiful stone walls around it. And if you're a non-secretor, you don't have any walls at all. You let the bad guys come, you fight them in front of City Hall. So in essence, being a non-secretor is a little bit of a disadvantage, but it's very important to know if you're a person who has a problems with insulin, problems with yeast, problems with autoimmune disease, metabolic syndrome X, we can throw a few others, environmental sensitivity. If you have any of these things, you should get your secretor type determined because knowing your secretor type allows you to put another level of exactitude into your blood type diet.
Okay. And then I guess as I'm reading through the information, then you've actually distinguished the secretor versus the non-secretor in the
right.
subtypes.
Mm-hmm. Right. In terms of what some of the foods change, that you know there were some there's some different changes in the charts of in terms of what kinds of herbs and foods and things are better for each type based on their secretor or non-secretor status, right?
When I think about blood typing from a blood bank point of view, and I'm really looking at histocompatibility, of course, one of the things that I just very generally want to ask, Dr. D'Adamo, do you think that there would be any benefit if the dollars were there and the multi-clinical trials or whatever to really do a more perfect study of how maybe some of the minor histocompatibility factors would weigh in on the discussion? Because going back to just not the secretor versus the non-secretor, but it strikes me that there are still some things, for instance, on your diet that I've tried to do. Oh, my God, we're getting ready to go to a break here. Dr. D'Adamo, can you wait around until after we have our station identification with the news, and we'll just continue with this discussion
sure.
here?
Yeah, sure.
Well, it'll be about four or five minutes. Is that
great.
Correct? Yeah. Do you mind?
I'll see you then.
Okay, great.
Nice.
Thank you very much.
We will return. We want to hear from you callers, 480-949-1310. We're giving away books. We've got Dr. D'Adamo on the line, and we'll be returning again in the next hour, right?
Yes, with tea, too.
That's right. Okay.
You've been listening to The Radio Doctors with Dr. Valeria Wyckoff and Dr. Damian Brandeis. Join The Radio Doctors every Saturday from 2 to 3 or access the show online at www.radiodoctors.net.
Where the valley comes to talk. This is Independent 1310 KXAM.
CNN Radio, I'm Matt Cherry. A strict curfew is expected to remain in place through Sunday in Baghdad in an effort to ease violence triggered by Wednesday's bombing of a Shiite shrine. CNN's Elaine Quijano reports President Bush made a phone call to a number of Iraqi leaders on Saturday to discuss the recent tensions.
This, of course, was an attempt by President Bush to really make known that the United States very much encourages them to work together, together, and also to reiterate the fact that the United States is supportive of their efforts in fighting terrorism. Elaine Quijano, CNN, the White House.
A warning from Al-Qaeda, a statement attributed to the terrorist group on a militant website Saturday, threatened that attacks are in the works, like Friday's foiled bid to blow up a Saudi oil plant. Two suicide bombers and two security guards died in that incident. The FBI says the discovery of ricin at a University of Texas dormitory